This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headlines: Iran's president welcomes an invitation from the Saudi king to visit Riyadh. Hundreds of Israeli reservists say they are joining widespread protests against the so-called judicial reforms. And the Russian president says his country is open to settlement of the Ukrainian crisis through political means. Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining us. My name is Kisum Shahmadi and these are our top stories this hour. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi has welcomed an invitation from the Saudi king to visit Riyadh. This follows negotiations and the signing of a reconciliation deal between the two countries. According to the Iranian president's deputy chief of staff for political affairs, the two countries said that the Chinese brokered deal earlier this month has helped normalize relations that were severed years before. The ties broke down when protesters attacked the Saudi diplomatic mission in Iran after Riyadh executed a prominent Shia cleric, Nimr al-Nimr. The deal will see the two countries reopen their embassies and missions within 2 months of implementing the security economic cooperation that was signed more than 20 years ago. Earlier today, the Iranian foreign minister said that he would soon meet his Saudi counterpart.
I will soon meet Saudi Arabia's foreign minister. We have agreed that technical delegations from the two sides visit embassies and consulates and make practical preparations for the reopening of the embassies.
Speaking at a press conference, Hossein Amir Abdullahian said that Iran has proposed three locations for the meeting. He said that the normalization agreement with Saudi Arabia was signed in an effort to promote peace in the region, and it will benefit the entire Muslim world. The top Iranian diplomat also touched on the talks to revive the 2015 deal known as the JCPOA. Tehran is pursuing an initiative to settle remaining differences. Amir Abdullahian said Iran and the UN Nuclear Agency have agreed on a roadmap to clear up what he called misunderstandings. He said that he can also have a positive impact on the JCPOA revival talks. Meanwhile, Iran's top security official has visited Iraq. He says that Tehran and Baghdad security relations will not be complete unless they discuss justice for those who were involved in the assassination of Qasem Soleimani. Earlier, we discussed this in our news review program. Let's take a listen.
It's time now for the news review section. Stay tuned. Iran says that the prosecution of those involved in the U.S. assassination of General Soleimani is a top priority in security cooperation between Tehran and Baghdad. Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council, Ali Shamkhani, made the comment during an official visit to Iraq. He said that the passage of time should not reduce the significance of the assassination. He added that the U.S. continues to destabilize the region through its mischievous acts that he described as something intolerable which should be ended. And for his part, Secretary of Iraq's National Security, Qasem al-Urouji, said Baghdad is committed to a parliamentary legislation that calls for all foreign forces to be expelled. He added that major parts of the legislation have already been implemented. The Iran official is in Iraq for talks on bilateral security cooperation. Now, to put this to discussion, let me invite a couple of guests. Said Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator, is joining me from Islamabad. Also with me is Mohsen Saleh, academic and political commentator out of Beirut. Welcome to the show, gentlemen. Mohsen Abbas, we have Mr. Shamkhani saying that, and as you also well know, that the U.S. is still continuing to destabilize the region, and these destabilizing moves should come to an end. Let's talk about this, and also the fact that, as also the National Security Council Secretary said, that the passage of time does not make you forget what the U.S. did, and I'm referring to the assassination of General Soleimani.
Well, I think all of the points Mr. Shamkhani has made are reiterating Iran's very clear understanding that it is the United States of America, along with its Zionist ally, Israel, that is causing most of the destabilization through all sorts of kind of clandestine means. Deep state is busy working to finance all sorts of groups. Just to name a few, of course, is ISIS-K. That's the one that everybody knows. But lesser known ones are relevant in this particular negotiation and dialogue between Iraq and Iran. And those are namely groups, for instance, like the PKK, the Kurdistan Workers' Party, Kurdish Democratic Party, all of whose HQs are in Iraq. And it's these groups and it's kind of their connection with dissident Iranian Kurds, if you like, who have been operating on the borders of Iran and creating incursions, making huge terrorist issues for Iran, and it's so much so that Iran had to act, and it acted with precision missiles, suicide drones, which hit the bases of the KDPI and others, and basically over 14 people, I think, were killed in those attacks, and 58 were wounded. One, significantly, was a U.S. so-called citizen. Deep state was there indeed. So the fact is that Iran is primarily getting Iraq to sign deals to say, look, sort this problem out on our borders, because it's being manipulated and used by the Zionist, Anglo-Zionist Empire in order to destabilize Iran through their Kurdish proxies. And I think what triggered it was, you know, in 2022, what we saw was the unification of the KDPI and the Democratic Party of Iranian Kurdistan. That happened in August of 2022, and lo and behold, they started causing all sorts of escalations of insurgencies, which Iran has, of course, quelled, but they remain a huge threat and a danger to Iranian security.
Okay. Now, Mr. Saleh, what would it take, in your opinion, for perpetrators, those behind the assassination of Iran's top General Soleimani, who played a major role in helping Iraqis fight Daesh terrorists, what would it take for perpetrators to be brought to justice?
Well, it's about time for the Iraqi government to take the decision. The parliament, the Iraqi parliament, has taken the legislative decision that all forces, foreign forces, should go out from Iraq, especially the Americans, who committed this historical and hysterical, crime against one of the officials, of the great official, the martyr, Qasem Soleimani. So it's probably they have to do something. They have to act against the Americans and brought those who committed this crime into justice. The Iraqis, especially the officials, they have to cooperate with the Iranian officials in order to send this big message to the authorities, especially the Democratic, who are having now a lot of problems with Donald Trump and his administration. So now they have the opportunity in order to bring these perpetrators and these criminals into justice, whether in Iraq, especially in Iraq, this crime committed on the Iraqi territories, and the Iraqis are responsible for getting not only the truth, the truth is clear and discerned, especially Trump and his aides said that they committed this crime. So now we have this another party, the Iraqis, the Iranians want their right. Of course, they have to follow that, to pursue that, in order to bring justice to these who committed this crime and bring them to the court, in order to find not only the truth, that which is true, as we have said, is clear, and we don't have to really rely on some lies of the Americans or in actually in some Iraqis. And especially the Iraqis and whoever cooperated to take action in this crime, I guess they have to be brought to their justice.
Okay, thank you very much for your contribution, Mohsen Abbas in Islamabad and Mohsen Saleh in Beirut.
A group of Israeli reservists in the elite military and intelligence units say they are joining the protests against the cabinet's planned judicial reforms. In a letter sent to Israeli media, around 650 reservists have said that they would not turn up for some duties on this Sunday, and they will refuse call-ups. Many describe themselves as volunteer reservists from special military forces. The rest, they say, are reservists, offensive cyber operators, including from Mossad, the Shin Bet spy agencies, and Israeli packed streets on Saturday for an 11th straight week against plans by cabinet to curb the Supreme Court's powers. The Syrian president has arrived in the United Arab Emirates on an official visit as more regional Arab states move to mend their fences with Damascus. Bashar al-Assad is accompanied by his wife, Asma al-Assad, and a high-ranking delegation, including his UAE visit. Assad wants to revive in Abu Dhabi that his Emirati counterpart, Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed al-Nahyan, has been doing. The protesters discussed further strengthening of bilateral relations and all-out economic cooperation. The Emirati president described his talks with Assad as constructive. This is Assad's third trip to the UAE since the beginning of the foreign-backed militancy in his country. Abu Dhabi opened an embassy in Damascus in 2018 and sent its foreign minister to visit Syria in late 2021. Assad also said that the UAE comes a few days from the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Moscow in high-level talks with the Russian President Vladimir Putin. Russia's president says his country is open to a settlement of the Ukrainian crisis through political means while rejecting the ultimatum. Vladimir Putin said, however, that Kiev must accept the new political realities on the ground, including the annexation of the certain regions to Russia, also the Crimea Peninsula. Putin's remarks had Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping to deliver a breakthrough on Ukraine. Putin welcomes China's address and plays a constructive role in ending the conflict, saying that the Sino-Russian relations were at the highest point. Putin also hailed Beijing's silence on Ukraine to understand the, quote, real reasons behind something. And the Chinese president says that his country has proposed to serve the ongoing crisis in Iran only if the global community agrees. Xi Jinping says Beijing and his initiative aimed at neutralizing the consequences of the Ukraine crisis and promoting a political settlement. He added that fighting a rational solution to find a crisis and a sustainable security of a continuation of the dialogue is equal to parametric member. As landmarks ahead, plan to visit Russia and China put forth 11,000 proposed a settlement Ukraine office and health anniversary of the war in Ukraine. And the Kremlin spokesman says the U.S. is directly involved in military operations in Russia. Deputy Peskov was referring to the encounter last week between the U.S. and spy drone and Russian fighters over the Black Sea. But, he said, such drones are not obviously on a peaceful mission and ensure the safety of shipping in international waters. The Pentagon say that the drone crashed after being harassed and clipped by the Russian innovation. It was also on a regular reconnaissance mission in international airspace. Russia, however, says that the drone had violated airspace restrictions and lost control of their sharp maneuvers. The first direct encounter between the UAE since the Ukraine war began in February last year. Tensions between Russia and China have started and gone to a new level. Washington accused Moscow of causing its drone to crash into the Black Sea, but Moscow has blamed increased U.S. intelligence gathering against Russia for the incredible Moscow night. And the Crimean Peninsula, remember, are provocative regions that were issued. And Siberia, first direct encounter between the U.S. and Russia since the Ukraine war began last year.
Tensions between the U.S. and Russia have risen to unprecedented levels after Washington accused Moscow of colliding with one of its Reaper surveillance drones, forcing it to crash into the Black Sea waters off Crimea. Russia denied it deliberately brought the unmanned aerial vehicle down. Moscow says the drone went down after stalling and never came into contact with another aircraft. Russia says the UAV was flying towards the Russian border without an active transponder in clear violation of the restricted area established for the conduct of the special military operation. Two interceptors were dispatched to investigate. As a result of sharp maneuvers, the MQ-9 unmanned aerial vehicle went into uncontrolled flight, lost altitude, and collided with the water surface. The Russian fighters did not use weapons, did not come into contact with the UAV, and returned safely to their home base. That's what the Russian Defense Ministry stated. But the U.S. has rejected Russia's explanation, accusing Russian jets of an unsafe and unprofessional intercept of the drone. U.S. military officials claimed their spy drone was operating in international airspace when a pair of Su-27 jets appeared, sprayed it with fuel, and struck the propeller of the UAV, which caused it to crash into the sea.
That brings us to the end of this edition of World News.
Felicitations at the beginning of a new Iranian year, Nowruz. Congratulations to everyone at the start of spring and revival of nature.
In the limelight.
In the first direct confrontation between Russia and the United States since the start of the Ukraine war, an American drone was shot down, raising tensions between senior Kremlin and White House officials. Washington claims that the actions of the Russians caused the downing of the drone, but Moscow has a different story. We take a look at some of the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Reuters news agency has covered this story and tells us more. Moscow says the diplomatic relations between Russia and the United States have plunged into a lamentable state amid a row between the two countries over a drone incident. The Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov told reporters on Wednesday, 15th of March, the bilateral relations were in dire straits after the U.S. accused Russia of downing one of its reconnaissance drones over the Black Sea. The U.S. military on Tuesday, 14th of March, claimed a Russian fighter plane had clipped the propeller of one of its spying drones flying over the Black Sea in international airspace, causing the aircraft to crash into the water. Russia rejected that its forces had made any effort to down the drone and instead suggested that the U.S. aircraft had possibly crashed due to sharp maneuvering. Meanwhile, hot on the heels of the crashing of the U.S. spy drone, Russia warns the United States that it will retaliate proportionately to all future American provocations. The Russian Defense Ministry said in a statement on Wednesday, 15th of March, flights of American strategic unmanned aerial vehicles off the coast of Crimea are provocative in nature, which creates preconditions for an escalation of the situation in the Black Sea zone. The statement added, Russia is not interested in such a development of events, but it will continue to respond proportionately to all provocations. According to Moscow, the incident happened as the unmanned aerial vehicle was flying over the waters of the Black Sea in the area of the Crimean Peninsula towards the Russian state border. Crimea declared independence from Ukraine on 17th of March 2014, and formally applied to fall under Russian sovereignty following a referendum. Kiev and Washington have refused to recognize Moscow's sovereignty over Crimea. Russia's Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu also told the Pentagon chief that Washington's increased intelligence gathering against Russia had led to a drone incident. The Defense Ministry said in a statement, Sergei Shoigu told his American counterpart Lloyd Austin that increased intelligence activities against the interests of the Russian Federation, as well as the non-compliance with the restricted flight zone declared by Moscow, had led to the drone incident. The English website of Al Jazeera Television Network has also covered this story and tells us more. US Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin has warned Moscow to operate its military aircraft with caution after Washington accused one of Russia's jets of allegedly downing an American military drone in international airspace. US Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin vowed on Wednesday, 15th of March, that US aircraft will fly wherever international law allows, after Russia's ambassador to the United States said the U.S. military's actions close to the Russian territory are unacceptable. Anatoly Antonov called on Washington to stop hostile flights near Russia's borders. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin spoke by phone with his Russian counterpart Sergei Shoigu about Tuesday's incident over the Black Sea, where the Pentagon claimed a Russian Su-27 fighter jet collided with a U.S. military drone, causing it to crash. Washington called the incident reckless and unprofessional, while Moscow denounced U.S. accusations and instead blamed the United States for conducting hostile flights near Russia's borders. Lloyd Austin told reporters just following the call with Sergei Shoigu, he said the United States will continue to fly and to operate wherever international law allows. and it is incumbent upon Russia to operate its military aircraft in a safe and professional manner. Meanwhile, the chairman of the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mark Milley, said the Pentagon is still analyzing video and data from the drone to see exactly what happened. He told reporters, "Was it intentional or not? We don't yet know." The Russian Defense Ministry in Moscow said on Tuesday, 14th of March, it detected an American MQ-9 drone over the waters of the Black Sea in the area of the Crimean Peninsula, flying towards the Russian state border. It added the drone was flying with its transponders turned off and flight jets were scrambled to identify it. The Russian Defense Ministry said as a result of sharp maneuvering at around 9:30 hours, Moscow time, the MQ-9 unmanned aerial vehicle entered an uncontrolled flight with a loss of altitude and collided with the surface of the water. The Russian Defense Ministry stressed that the Russian fighters did not use their onboard weapons, made no contact with the unmanned aerial vehicle, and safely returned to their home airfield. The U.S. newspaper The Hill has also covered this story and tells us more. Hawkish Republican Senator Marco Rubio says the United States should begin flying more military drones with fighter jet escorts over the Black Sea region following the crash of an American drone there. Republican Senator Marco Rubio, the vice chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, claimed Russia downed a U.S. Reaper drone over the Black Sea on Tuesday, 14th of March, which is a test for the Biden administration. Rubio added, "It's a test to see if we'll respond to it." Washington called the incident reckless and unprofessional, while Moscow rejected U.S. accusations and instead blamed the United States for conducting hostile flights near Russia's borders. The U.S. military released footage of what it described as an unsafe and unprofessional intercept by the Russian warplane. The short video footage purportedly shows a Russian Su-27 fighter jet approaching the back of the U.S. MQ-9 drone on Tuesday, 14th of March, and dumping fuel as it passes. The European command said the warplane made a second pass at the unpiloted drone, again dumping fuel before colliding with the drone. Senator Marco Rubio said, "I think our response should be to fly more of these in that area and to potentially have them escorted by U.S. fighter jets, which are manned and have the capability to respond." Senator Rubio said members of the Gang of Eight, the top four party leaders in Congress and the chairman and vice chairman of the Senate and House Intelligence Committees, have not received an additional briefing on the incident, but still claim that it's clear that Russian fighter jets acted intentionally. Senator Rubio claimed this was a deliberate effort. This wasn't some incident, it was some harassment effort that went awry. This was on design. They basically decided we're going to begin to shoot down U.S. assets, whatever's flying in what they call restricted airspace. Russia's ambassador to the United States says U.S. military's unacceptable actions close to the Russian territory are a cause for concern, urging Washington to stop its hostile flights near the country's borders. Russia's ambassador to Washington, Anatoly Antonov, made the remark in a post on his Telegram channel on Wednesday, 15th of March. "We assume that the United States will refrain from further speculation in the media and stop flights near Russian borders. We consider any action with the use of U.S. weaponry as openly hostile," Anatoly Antonov further quoted U.S. National Security Council spokesman John Kirby as saying that U.S. unmanned aerial vehicles made those kinds of overflights on a daily basis.
IRIB English Radio presents
Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
With the presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. This is IRIB English Radio. You are listening to the program of Viewpoint, and I'm Beta, the host of today's episode. And we have two dear speaker guests here with me, Brother Ali and Brother Muhammad. Welcome. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
So, in this episode of today, we're going to discuss one of the most controversial issues of Islamic world about Palestinian issue. So, as you know, Palestine is one of the most valuable lands and regions in Islam thoughts and also other religions. So, in this episode, based on the leadership statements, we're going to discuss this issue.
She's standing on the rubble of her home. She cries out for her parents.
طبعا هذا ليس اختلاف طبعا في
The youth are the same, but the circumstances around them have changed. The harsh realities faced by the youth nowadays makes life harder for them compared to previous generations. With the current limitation, the youth have a hard time achieving their aspirations and dreams.
To a lot of Palestinians, this is more unrealistic. It's more unrealistic because 7 million Palestinians will not simply give up their human rights to return back to their land. So for them, this is the solution. And Israel has, the six decades we've had, Israel has tried everything except what they think is the right solution, the right for the Palestinians, which is a solution based on international law, based on recognizing basic human rights, allowing Palestinians to return to their homes. This is the solution which Israel has not tested, which the international community has not tried, even though this is a solution which is enshrined under various agreements, various human rights treaties throughout the world. So for Palestinians, this is the only way that the real solution in Palestine will come about.
So, in this episode, we're going to discuss the connection and the bond between the Islamic Republic and the Palestinian issue. I mean, first of all, there is a connection here between the revolution we did and these Palestinian people. So, I want you to answer this question that what is the connection between these two? And the first, what was the effect of the revolution of the Islamic country for the Palestinian people?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny. This is a very good question. I mean, the idea of supporting Palestinians and the supporting the oppressed in the world, and specifically the oppressed Muslims in West Asia, was devised by Imam Khomeini, rahmatullahi alayhi.
Yeah.
And even it was before the revolution. Even before the revolution, we have the statements of the late Ayatollah Mutahhari. I mean, beautifully he said that this is the only issue of the Islam world. He said if the Holy Prophet was back to the Islamic Ummah, it was the only issue for the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. This is what Ayatollah Mutahhari, one of the brilliant thinkers of the Islamic Ummah, was actually saying with regard to the Palestine. He said to the Muslims that in case there was a Hussein sometime and there was a Shemr. And who is the Hussein of the time and who is the Shemr of the time? We have to know that. And again, he said that they have moved here. They have moved here with ideological support. They are not coming here just to establish a country to finish everything. No, they came with the motto of from the Nile to Euphrates. Right? They are not going to suffice with this region. Mm-hmm. If it was not the support of Imam Khomeini and even before and after revolution, the issue of Palestine was not that much in the, let's say, in the board of the Islamic Ummah. But it's quite clear that after the revolution, a person who was the only supporter of Palestine becomes the leader of a country. Then all the facilities that he had at hand would come to work on this idea, on this philosophy. So it is quite clear that we see that in the last 40 years, the kind of progress that Palestinians actually found is quite clear. The time that they had nothing to even defend themselves, they had only small pieces of stones.
Yeah.
Now they have missiles. They have drones. Where are they coming from? Is it Saudi Arabia that is supporting them?
Yeah.
Or another Arab countries
Definitely
that are supporting
not.
Them? Can you name only one single Muslim country that gives them the knowledge of how to make a drone or let's say the knowledge of making missiles?
Iran.
Now Israel is not the Israel of 40 years ago. They are not daring to be too harsh with Palestinians because as soon as they do something, they will see the reaction of the Palestinians. Was it so in last 4 decades? In at least in, let's say, 20 years ago? Definitely no.
Definitely.
So this is the difference that actually happened due to the appearance of Islamic Republic. And it shows its consequences now, that Palestinians are now equipped.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely there was a great change and progress in the morale of the Palestinians from last 40 years.
Thank you. And Brother Muhammad, do you have anything to add to this issue?
When it comes to the connection between the Islamic Republic and Palestine and the Palestinian people, like we mentioned, it's actually a matter of ideology, and it's
yeah.
a matter of our beliefs more than it is a matter of control over the world. You see, it's important we understand that. Our faith and our beliefs and our ideology teaches us to stand against oppressors, to stand with the oppressed wherever they may be. And it's not like a strategic thing that we're trying to, it's not like a political thing that we're after. Now, one thing we need to understand is that our politics, our policies, the arguments that we, the verdicts that we issue in the parliament, the budgets that we issue in the parliaments, these are all on the foundation of our beliefs and faith. So if politically we take action against Israel, the so-called Israel, or the illegal occupation of Israel in Palestine, it's not because it's a political matter of control over the region. It's a matter of our ideology. Our politics follow our ideology.
Yeah. So you're telling me that it is more a matter of ideological things than political thing,
yeah.
political issues.
And our politics follow ideology. It's not that politics are completely
it's divided.
The politics are all based on your ideology. You know,
yeah.
it's all based on your faith. How do you see the world? Your worldview. Our worldview is what's really against this illegal occupation, and this worldview gives result in our politics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So somehow you're telling me that these ideological and political parts are tangled together
yeah.
and we cannot divide them in that
yeah.
way. And as you know, the leadership stated that the victory of the revolution is incomplete without solving the problem of Palestinian people. So up to here, we talked about the effects of the revolution and Islamic Republic on the Palestinian people. How about the other perspective on this issue? I mean, the importance and effect of Palestinian people and the Palestinian issue on our republic.
Yeah. Actually, the leader of the Islamic Ummah has another strange statement that is really beautiful to be heard.
Yeah.
He says the issue of Palestine is the mysterious key to the reappearance of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam. So what is making him to say, I mean, such a thing or such things and to make this issue as the first and foremost issue in the Islam world? Something that comes to mind is that, look, enemy is testing the Islamic Ummah. Actually, they started testing us from 1948 till today.
Yeah.
They're coming step by step ahead, and they want to see what is our reaction. When they see this slipness in the Islamic Ummah, they proceed, you see? So leader is going to awaken the Islamic Ummah from this this long sleep. They want to tell them, this is important. We have to first, in our country, digest it first, then to promote it among the Islamic Ummah. We have to first understand it. Look, this proceed of the enemy that every day happens step by step, that comes even to our vicinity, to our neighborhood, that comes to Iraq, into Syria, that comes into Afghanistan, has no stoppage, you see? This is now the only country that officially standing in front of Israel and the superpowers to say that no Israel in the region is Iran.
Yeah.
They want to target this. In case they target Iran, there wouldn't be any other, let's say, objection to the issue of Israel. Mm. And Muslims will continue this long sleep, you see. Mm-hmm. So that's why he, as the leader of the Islamic Ummah, knows the priorities of the Muslim Ummah. He's not going to only look at the issue that we have inside Iran. Look, it's as if you say that, okay, the Holy Prophet, because we believe that this wilaya is the continuation of wilaya of the Holy Prophet and the Imams that comes to, for example, the Wali al-Faqih. So it's as if to say, okay, the Holy Prophet was requested just to give his own fatwas for the people of Medina, the city-state of Medina, not for Meccans, not for Yemenis. No, Islam is a worldwide religion.
Yeah.
So he's going to see the priorities of the Islamic Ummah in general. But which is important? Yes, issue of Palestine is that important.
You see, when the Islamic Revolution took place, the slogan and one of the manifestos of the Islamic Revolution was to support the oppressed around the world and stand against oppression. And we need to understand and perceive that Islamic Revolution and this Islamic government is not a matter of, is not a phenomenon that happens once, for example, like there is daylight and then there is night. No, it's something that happens, it's something that is to be upheld as long as the values of it must be upheld as long as it exists. So if for one instance or for one moment the Islamic Revolution, the Islamic government does not cater for it, does not think about it, does not sponsor or support the oppressed against the oppression, then it's incomplete. That's how we should perceive this. When the leader of the Islamic Republic, he says that this Islamic Revolution will be incomplete without Palestine, without the freedom of Palestine, is because if the Palestine, God forbid, was to face destruction, and yeah, they will not, definitely. They will definitely not face destruction. And we know that that's the promise of God. But if they were to face destruction, then definitely the Islamic government has a big weakness in it that it wasn't able to support. That's why when the leader of the Islamic Republic, he says it's incomplete because of the manifesto that we have at the beginning, supporting the oppressed against the oppression.
Yeah.
I want to add one point to the explanations of respected brother. The leader of the Islamic Ummah once said that to do amr bil ma'ruf and nahy anil munkar, that is enjoining the good and forbidding the evil, it's at least good to show your disagreement or objection to the action itself. You don't need to do anything. Just to show that, okay, I'm not happy with that. Okay? But it will bring a change. Now Israel is a munkar, is evil.
Yeah.
So everyone has a responsibility. Not everyone who has a responsibility. Every Muslim, freedom seeker has a responsibility. You see? Me as a person, you as a person, as a Muslim and a person, and the other one as a Jew and a person, and others and Christians. They have, I mean, if they are thinking that they are freedom seekers of the world, they have duty. For example, you might say, okay, I'm a housekeeper, ordinary worker, I'm a mere soldier, what can I do? Yes, everyone, just to show his objection, that this state is an illegal state and it takes the rights of the people, this is the duty of a person. But me, for example, has a pen and I can write. You have, let's say, Tribune, that is the media, and you can say and you can speak, this is your duty. In case you become indifferent, you are not going to be the addressee of the saying of the Holy Prophet that says at the end, you are not a Muslim, right?
You know, as Imam Khomeini says, if all the Muslims around the world, considering the population, if they were to take one bucket of water, each Muslim, if they were to pour one bucket of water in the occupied lands, Israel will be drowned underwater.
Yeah.
So should we study?
No, we shouldn't do that. We should flood, not water, but flood against Israel in other ways.
So let's have our voice together to make an ocean of love.
Exactly. There we go.
Thank you, dear brothers, for your presence in this episode. And thank you, dear listeners, for listening to us. It was all the time we had. I wish you farewell. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi.
Every day we tell each other that this day will be the last, and tomorrow we all can go home free, and all this Palestine, tomorrow we'll be free. Palestine, tomorrow we'll be free. Father, to wipe away my tears, that's why I will cry. I feel scared, but I won't show my fears. I keep my head high, deep in my heart, I never have any doubt. The Palestine, tomorrow will be free. Palestine, tomorrow will be free.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
In the limelight.
Following the official announcement of Donald Trump's candidacy in the 2024 U.S. presidential election and the strengthening of Ron DeSantis' presence in the race, other Republicans are looking for a way to enter the race. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered the story and tells us more. America's 2024 presidential race is showing signs of kicking into gear amid reports that Florida's right-wing Republican governor, Ron DeSantis, is now laying the groundwork for a White House bid as Donald Trump finally hits the campaign trail. Ron DeSantis' moves even spurred Trump into attacking him directly, as the former U.S. president held relatively low-key events recently in the key early voting states of New Hampshire and South Carolina. Before seeking to attack DeSantis' actions over fighting the COVID-19 pandemic, Donald Trump said, "Ron would have been governor if it wasn't for me. When I hear he might run, I consider that very disloyal." DeSantis began his time as Florida's governor in the shadow of Donald Trump, whose political messaging he closely emulated. but he has since emerged as Donald Trump's most powerful political rival in the Republican Party, increasingly popular with many party officials who are wary of the scandals and chaos that accompanied Donald Trump's time in office. The Washington Post has reported that DeSantis' political team has already identified potential campaign hires in states like Iowa and New Hampshire, whose traditional early spots in the nomination contest give them outsized influence on the race. Citing two Republican sources with knowledge of conversations and staff meeting on Ron DeSantis' team, the paper said the Florida governor was in close talks with two current and experienced members of his current team, Phil Cox and Jenera Peck, about possible senior roles in any 2024 effort. Bill Bowen, a New Hampshire Republican delegate, told the paper that his state would probably be receptive to Ron DeSantis. DeSantis has carved out turf in the Republican Party that invites conflict with Donald Trump. He has tacked to the extremist right wing of the party, especially on social issues. His state has restricted abortion, sought to demonize further education in the state as a bastion of liberal power, and he has inflamed tensions over immigration with a series of political stunts. In response to Ron DeSantis' likely presidential bid, Donald Trump has issued threats against the governor. Last November, Trump appeared to warn DeSantis by hinting at political blackmail against DeSantis' potential 2024 run. It was once widely expected that Donald Trump, the only so far declared major candidate for a Republican nomination, would be largely unopposed. But a series of scandals, including meeting with white nationalists and a flop of high-profile Trump-backed candidates in November's midterm elections, has seen Trump's grip on the Republican Party loosen considerably. The Associated Press has also covered this story. Former U.S. President Donald Trump kicked off his 2024 White House bid with stops on Saturday, 28th of January, in New Hampshire and South Carolina, events in early voting states marking the first campaign appearances since announcing his latest run more than 2 months ago. Trump and his allies hope the events in states with enormous power in selecting the nominee will offer a show of force behind the former president after a sluggish start to his campaign that left many questioning his commitment to running again. While Trump has spent a month since he announced largely ensconced in his Florida club and at his nearby golf course, his aides insist they have been busy behind the scenes. His campaign opened a headquarters in Palm Beach, Florida, and has been hiring staff. And in recent weeks, backers have been reaching out to political operatives and elected officials to secure support for Donald Trump at a critical point when other Republicans are preparing their own expected challengers. In New Hampshire, Trump promoted his campaign agenda, including immigration and crime, and said his policies would be opposite of President Joe Biden's. He cited the Democrats' move to change the election calendar, costing New Hampshire its leadoff primary spot, and accused Joe Biden, a fifth-place finisher in New Hampshire in 2020, of disgracefully trashing his beloved political tradition. Trump told party members, "I hope you're going to remember that during the general election." Trump himself twice won the primary, but lost the state each time to Democrats. Later in South Carolina, Donald Trump said he planned to keep the state's presidential primary as the first in the South and called it a very important state. In his speech, he hurtled from criticism of Joe Biden and Democrats to mockery of people promoting the use of electric stoves and electric cars, and reminiscing about efforts while serving as president to increase oil production, strike trade deals, and crack down on migration at U.S.-Mexico border. After his South Carolina speech, Donald Trump told the Associated Press in an interview that it would be a great act of disloyalty if Ron DeSantis opposed him in the primary and took credit for the governor's initial election. The Reuters news agency has also covered this story. Now, a swathe of other U.S. Republicans seem poised to enter the presidential race. Donald Trump even appeared to give his blessing to his former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, after she informed him that she is considering a 2024 presidential bid. In a Fox News interview earlier this month, when asked about her previous comments about not running for president if Trump ran, Nikki Haley responded that the survival of America matters. She said, "It's bigger than one person, and when you're looking at the future of America, I think it's time for a new generational change. I don't think you need to be 80 years old to go to be a leader in Washington, D.C. I think we need a younger generation to come in, step up, and really start fixing things." Other former Trump cabinet members have also hinted at their presidential bids. Earlier this week, CBS asked former National Security Advisor John Bolton if he was considering a 2024 run. Bolton said that characterization was exactly right. Bolton also criticized Donald Trump's 2024 presidential bid, calling it poison to the Republican Party. John Bolton said, "I think Republicans, especially after the 8th of November elections last year, see that he's poison to the ticket. He cannot be elected president. If he were the Republican nominee, he would doom our chances to get a majority in the Senate and also in the House of Representatives. I don't think he's going to be the Republican nominee." Recently, former U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said that he will decide whether he will run for president. When asked whether Donald Trump's 2024 presidential bid is having an impact on his own decision-making, Mike Pompeo said, "None." There are also likely to be a host of other Republicans eventually in the race, with people like former Vice President Mike Pence, Georgia Governor Brian Kemp, and his Virginia counterpart Glenn Youngkin, among names often touted as likely runners.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.